Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 11:53 p.m. That is Hong Kong summertime, and today is August 2nd. And this is I think when we look at the euro chart, particularly on a weekly basis, it would be hard to argue that this isn't a pretty emphatic breakout. There was the possibility that it would encounter resistance around that 116-117 level, where it had pulled back sharply in both 2015 and 2016, but that has not been the case. It has been up in a rather emphatic fashion over three consecutive weeks, and this is now a pretty emphatic breakout. And that is running quite contrary to what many people were expecting from the euro, not least because Europe needs a weaker currency. But when we look at it on the 10-year basis, we can see that it pulled back considerably in 2014, and that even as we get up now towards this 120 area, that was an area of previous support. So, and it's also a psychological area, so maybe we're going to have some questions asked at that point. But considering the just how powerful the breakout has been, a clear downward dynamic would be required to signal that a pause is underway or that we're getting the first consolidation. What we are starting to see is that the market is moving towards pricing in the potential that the ECB will move towards some form of quantitative, or at least tapering its quantitative easing program. And they may give some signal to that later in the year, but they're going to be incredibly careful. The ECB, and most particularly Mario Draghi, had to fight very hard to get quantitative easing off the ground in the first place, and they're going to be rather reticent, I suspect, to endanger what they have gained, which has been a return to growth by the Eurozone. I think it is also instructive to keep a close eye on the dollar index, because while the euro has broken out, the dollar index is now testing the lower side of its range. I don't think anyone would question that there isn't an oversold condition evident on this chart, and it is right at that lower side of the range. And as the euro comes up towards that 120 area, then there is the potential that we could see a pause in that region. Nevertheless, there is a rivetingly consistent progression of lower rally highs, particularly over the last 6 weeks on the dollar index, and that would need to be broken with an emphatic upward move, which there has been a distinct dearth of since January of this year, to confirm that we're getting at least an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition. The yen, of course, is the other large constituent of the dollar index, and it has been, I think, laboring around the 110 area. It weakened briefly from that area in here today, but not by any discernible margin. The dollar still has a progression of higher reaction lows against the yen for the last 3 months, but it really does have got, it has more to do to really confirm that it's back in the driver's seat, that the dollar has the capability to rally in a more robust fashion. I'm not quite sure why that's not giving us the 5-year chart, but we can see that when we do have the 5-year chart, that it is that this 110 area has been an area of support for the dollar, and the Japanese want a weaker currency, not least because Abe is under threat politically right now, and he needs the economy to do better, and certainly the politicians would like to see the currency weaker. Quite whether the Bank of Japan can muster that is perhaps another story. And Apple's results came out today, and they were positive, and that's of course ahead of the release of their 10th anniversary iPhone. The price has surged up here to almost $160, and perhaps the more important thing is that it had reverted, or at least unwound, much of the overbought condition relative to the trend mean, just by virtue of going sideways since its peak in early June, and now it has reasserted on the upside. It hasn't quite held the advance, but this is a pretty emphatic upward move, and that is reasserting on the upside. It also helped the Dow Jones to push on to new high ground. But I think it is worth highlighting that the Nasdaq is in negative territory with 4 hours left in the trading session. I've updated the price through the current price that's available, and it is in mildly negative territory. If we can look very closely, we can see that it did get all the way up to test that 6,000 level back on Thursday, and it does have the conditions for a key reversal. But that's such an awfully long tail on the candle that downside follow-through would have been required to confirm the signal, and so far we haven't had it. What it does suggest is that there is a pause going on in the region of that psychological 6,000 level. It's not at all beyond the bounds possibility that we get those kinds of pauses at big round numbers, and certainly the 5,000 area was another area where the Nasdaq paused last year. So there is the potential that we get an additional pause and that it spends some additional time below that 6,000 level. The fact that I think at the present moment there are only about 11 shares on the upside and 89 on the downside for the Nasdaq 100 would suggest that there is some pressure coming under onto the technology sector, and I think that that's not perhaps too surprising, considering just how quickly it had gone up in July. And we are now entering the what many would require would name the dog days of summer. Back when I started working with David in 2003 and into in 2004, he would head off for a month of cycling in August, and my traders did the same thing, and so did most of the politicians and bureaucrats. And it turned out to be a rather quiet period of time in markets. At least volume went down. Of course, that has all ended since the financial crisis and the rise of quantitative trading. But what it also means is that when you have less people at their desks, there is the potential for some volatility. That's I think that is quite clear. If we look at history, what it has also meant is that when people come back in September, that the market has pulled back a bit, and then they get back to buying, and it sets up a pretty good buying opportunity. So we could be in for a month where markets don't do much of anything, or that if we look at the Nasdaq on the weekly basis, that we could just have a period of time where it unwinds more of its overextension relative to the trend mean. The Nasdaq Biotech Index has been pulling back, albeit in a relatively mild fashion, for 5 of the last 7 sessions. And what we can also look at, and I think it's important to look at that medium-term trend, because the most important thing that has happened on this index over really over the last 18 months was that emphatic upward break that we had in June. And we're getting some consolidation of that advance. But what I thought was particularly interesting in here today was Illumina, because it was the leading performer on the Nasdaq 100, and it is breaking up and out of its medium-term range. And I do apologize for the speed of my internet connection. It just seems to be, and that's why I am relying more on the chart library than the Bloomberg right now, because my Bloomberg is interminably slow. But Illumina is breaking up and out of a medium-term range in here today, and I think that's important. Illumina released its latest architecture for its genetic sequencing machines back in February, and it anticipated that by the time they have reached the end of their product cycle, that people will be able to achieve a cost of less than $100 for a full genetic sequencing of the human genome. And it's currently around $1,000. That's enormously enabling. So Illumina is both a technological innovator, but it's also an enabler for the wider biotechnology sector. The fact that it is doing better That's positive. That's probably an indication that innovation continues within the biotechnology sector. So I regard the most important thing on the Nasdaq Biotech Index as that big breakout we saw in June, and unless that is countermanded, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And if we look at other indices that have been firming from the region of their trend means, and then the FTSE mining sector, a FTSE 350 mining sector, is instructive that it is in negative territory in here today. That's despite the fact that Rio Tinto announced it's a record dividend, but it wasn't quite as large as some people had been anticipating, so the share actually pulled back. But and Standard Chartered pulled back as well. And of course, Standard Chartered got itself into trouble by lending a great deal of money to commodity producers, and it has also had a very similar trajectory to the mining sector. It has almost rallied in a one-for-one basis with the mining sector. The fact that the miners are pulling back, and also, of course, the fact that Standard Chartered wasn't able to sustain its dividend, or excuse me, reintroduce a dividend, is has certainly been weighing on it in here today, and it posted a downside key reversal. And India, sorry, fat finger there, India has cut its interest rates, and that was widely anticipated. But what, and of course, the politicians have been very keen for the RBI to do that. The of course the Nifty has been among the best performing indices over the last while, and it is now trading above that psychological 10,000 level. And what, of course, this does is that the RBI, having been behind the curve somewhat, has now cut interest rates, and the BJP, which is Modi's party, has got control of a majority of states, and now they have to begin to deliver. And certainly, what we've seen, and this was a point I made in a presentation that I gave to the CFA Institute, colleague, it must be 5 or 6 years ago, that when we compare the development models in China and in India, that the best way to compare China is with the evolution of the USA with the grid system and central planning, whereas just if you look at London and the fact that it doesn't have a central train station, but rather that there are some significant train stations dotted around the city, and that they are all reflective of private enterprise having built the vast majority of the country's original infrastructure. And that's exactly what we've had again in India, that it's much more aligned with the kind of private enterprise-driven development model that that really characterized the evolution of the Industrial Revolution in the UK. So the evolution, for example, of Reliance Industries, that they were able to, despite the fact that it is the nation's largest refiner, that they have gone ahead and built this 4G network, which has taken the country from 2G to 4G, is just an incredible innovation. It's not only going to be cash generative for the company for the foreseeable future, but it's going to open up the potential for mobile banking. And I've seen ample evidence of just how profound a change that has had in China, just from walking around here for the last couple of weeks. And that's going to happen in India as well, that there are hundreds of millions of people are not banked, and there is a reliance on cash, and the counterfeit currency issue that the demonetization of the 100-rupee note tried to address late last year, well, that could be largely solved overnight with the evolution of mobile banking. So there are more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak, and mobile banking is a rapidly evolving sector that is, I think, benefiting the vast majority of people that never had access to a banking facility. And of course, with banking, you get savings, but you also get access to credit. And that is something that is a powerful, bullish phenomenon for globally oriented companies. And the fact that we are in a synchronized phase of global economic expansion is really quite positive. And while there is the short-term potential that we could have some pause and consolidation, the longer-term potential is that the growth center of the world, which is Asia, and the population centers of the world, also in Asia, but more increasingly in Africa, have got improving governance, and that there are measures underway to improve access to basic facilities, and banking is one of those for more than half of the world's population, and that is something that is, I think, underappreciated by investors. So that would suggest that if we do have a pullback at some point in August, then it's a buying opportunity, that this is still a bullish environment. And if we ask ourselves just simple filter questions, is there evidence of trend ending characteristics? Well, then no is the answer. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.